Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I sent you a link to Brooks Furniture Emporium.
Oh, yeah. I got it. There's some really great stuff on there. I what a fun endeavor. Like, what a fun... I just think, like, the pieces that you're discovering that are in, like, these, like, mint condition must be very fun to deal with.
The house that I'm selling items out of to help clear the house, the person themselves was a collector, so it makes it pretty easy to put it back on the market and to research. And like, did you see? Okay, so there was a table that is like so hobbit chic. It's like made out of twigs.
And it gives me very like beech wood, like driftwood kind of reclaimed kind of feels. Yeah.
Oh, totally. And I like when you try and research a piece like that and you're like, I don't even know what I started Googling bundle of sticks, but a table. And then after my third try, I think I said table. I put in table made out of twigs, and then the table popped up, and I found out it's called a rustic Americana console table. They're really rare, and the resale value, if I was on an antique site, could be up to like $1,700.
Wow. I want to see you go on the show. I want you to have like, which Led Zeppelin album is it where it's like the guy with the bundle of sticks on his back?
Four.
I want you, but like you with that table on your back.
Great.
Like,
cool.
I think that's your branding there.
It's all coming full circle, guys. Waiting tables, you know, was a great skill of mine. Might be a good skill of mine coming up again too. I'm going to go apply today.
Good, great.
At a place. I'm going to go do it. But I am also finding out I am good at hustling and selling furniture.
Yay!
Welcome to Side Work Podcast, everybody. I'm your host and furniture salesperson, Brooke Van Poplin.
Hi, guys. I'm your other host and furniture supporter of selling, Andrea Wallace. Yes, that's super fun. Good Lord, good old God Almighty. Here we are again. I'm excited for this. It must be fun to see the people that are going to like take these items home with them, you know?
I do have a feeling about like I'm not just like I'm just trying to sell things and fuck you. Like, I really want people to like things, and I really hope it makes their space work, and I get a really good warm feeling watching my furniture that I found or that was mine just kind of go to a cool home. I told you I don't like it when people are creepy and I get bad vibes and I'm like, I don't want you to have my thing. But
No, I totally get it. We got these like this killer like shelving unit that we got like a few months ago. It's the same, you know, I grew up with these cool shelving units. It's like postmodern kind of feel, you know, it's oak but like darker. You know, it looks like a little more, it's not like, it kind of is writing mid-century but a little more 70s, you know, postmodern for sure. But like, I know that didn't make any sense what I just said, but like,
I'm like, yeah, I got it.
No, it's postmodern 70s. Like that's, but it's like kind of a knockoff, like early 80s version of it. Right. So I grew up with shelves like these and I'd been looking and looking and looking and I finally found it. And I was like way deep into the valley, like out like past Woodland Hills, back where like there's like really beautiful rock formations out there in the San Fernando Valley that you can tell. It's like out near that. And like in this house, and when we had to move the furniture, rightly so, ourselves, And it was a house that was like, you know, I think the person who lived there maybe got put into a home or had sure. passed. But there's a lot of medical stuff like all over the place. And they were cleaning the place out. And when we moved the shelves themselves, it was like brand new white carpet underneath where the shelves were. And like the most like very, very filthy, 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 like beige white carpet. And I was like, man, these have been here for they have been in this position for probably 20 to 30 years. They have not budged.
It's no, I know people like if you have, you know, if any of this sounds kind of fun and interesting to you as a side hustle, if you're listening out there, it there is something to it. And it's giving me a little bit of that service industry like zip because it's like it is hard work. You're out there like you're cleaning, you're restoring, you're moving, you know, you're kind of merchandising, taking photos, you're being a good salesperson, like all of my experience as a writer, I'm really good at writing ads that entice people, you know, to click on my profile. And so I don't know, give it a try, people. There are some great accounts to follow on Instagram of people who give you really good tips on how to restore Goodwill furniture and put it back on its back into its original glory and then make a couple hundy off it.
It's super fun. And I have a tip. When I brought these babies back, like it wasn't until I got them inside that I was like, oh my God, someone smoked in this house for a decade or more. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is horrible. What do I do? And what I did and found out is I just kept oiling them because oil is attracted to like oil. So it will pull out the stink. And then I mix eucalyptus oil in with my I think it's a stronger one. It's a neutralizing oil. And I just over and over and over again went over them. And I feel like we're finally there and have neutralized the stink after a few months. So it took a minute.
hot tips coming at you. Well, if you guys can't tell, we are delving back into a retail two-parter.
Very retail talk, that's for sure.
I know. We are going crazy talking about merchandising, selling, you know, wheeling and dealing. We are going to do two episodes. We just love to do it, to take a little break from all service related things because as we know, retail is our sister service industry, and it's really fun to talk about all the jobs. So at the back end of this episode, we're gonna go back to my retail days as a record store employee, which I'm super psyched about.
I love it. You're like, stay with us.
This
is the juice. The juice is worth the squeeze. Like,
We're gonna get into the days when people would break open your car to steal your CD player.
Yeah, now they just smash and grab the entire store. Oh my. I was thinking with headlines, I was like, oh, should we be like focusing on retail headlines? Like, we'll do it definitely in the next episode. But like, as I was going through them, all of it is just like shoplifting is up. And like, I'll find some nice ones, but like, it's bleak.
It's bleak. Yeah. Shoplifting, as you know, as we've said many times, like your life and your safety is not worth some stolen merchandise. Do not go after a shoplifter ever, ever, ever. Should we do a few headlines?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get into it.
Okay. All right. So this is, you know, for those of us who have to suffer through our iced lattes or our beautiful highball at a bar, and we are now given paper straws. I mean, the paper straw can suck it. It's such a bummer. But I have, for people who hate the paper straws, even though they're quote unquote eco-friendly, turns out that is not the case. There have been findings and tons of backlash against the paper and plant-based straws because a study has shown in Belgium they contain tons and tons of forever chemicals, which are the PFAs, which is the whole point of us trying not to put this into the environment, not putting it in our body. And these paper straws have shit tons of chemicals that, as we know, they break down and you end up with a bunch of the straw in your fucking mouth.
Yeah, dude, that shit gets soggy as hell. And I tell you what, forever chemicals was not in my wedding vows, if you know what I'm saying. So I am not on board with this whatsoever. Bamboo straws, or I love when I go to a restaurant and they have metal straws, like cute little short metal straws. I think it's fucking great. I'm way on board with that. And I feel like there's like Thai restaurants and Vietnamese restaurants have had metal straws forever. Like, it's just like been part of the scene for a very long time. So I don't know if people are stealing them. Maybe they're a pain in the ass to wash, but I don't feel like everybody's going to steal metal straws. Do you?
I mean, first of all, I'm that bitch who's got a pack of like 10 metal straws. I like to keep them with me, you know, because we live in a state where they just, you don't get straws, you know, unless you specifically ask for it, which is going to come up in a minute. But no, I do. And I love the metal straw in my insulated to-go cup that either keeps my cold bev or my hot coffee, what have you. And yeah, it's just something to have them floating around in your car or your purse.
Yeah,
normalize it.
Yeah, or just, you know, just don't have a straw. It's fine. I mean, it's cute to have a little, trust me, I love the little, when you have like, you know, your hand like grasped over the opening of the glass and the straw pokes out between two of your fingers and that's how you decide to like drink your little cocktail bev, you know? Like, I'm into it. I'm into that look. I want people to look at me while it's happening. But like, but I'm all on board. Bamboo. I think bamboo is a great choice, by the way. Have you drank out of a cute little bamboo cocktail straw? They're fantastic.
Wonderful. Well, that's clearly like the better choice right now. And I've certainly been given bamboo cutlery, which I also like.
Also great. Breaks down real quick. Real quick like. Well, thanks for the update on Chemical Corner here at Sidework Podcast.
Chemical Corner. Oh my God. All right. Now this is also hilarious to me. Okay. So a brewery in Akron, Ohio.
Oh, can we just say props to Ohio for voting to keep abortion legal? Hi. Or having as a choice. Uh-huh. Props fucking Ohio.
Okay. Props. Same with what were all the states? Kentucky and Virginia as well, which is amazing. Okay, so in Akron, Ohio, there is a brewery called R. Shea Brewing, and they're really having trouble keeping their business afloat, and so they started a GoFundMe, which all of this sounds pretty normal, right? Like you do things to try and earn money for your beloved brewery, but they need to make, their goal is $2.3 million.
Whoa. Why don't they just, you're just like looking for new investors, I think is at this point what you say.
Yes, it's like you got, this is so red flaggy to me. It is like, and I don't think they'll meet their goal, which means that then they don't get that money. But, you know, they're saying like, well, we need funds to pay off our high interest SBA loan to keep our working capital. We're going to finish a remodel of a different location. Like they're laying it all out. But it's like, you guys, I don't think this is on the public's shoulder.
No. I mean, no, I mean, it's, these SBA loans are so interesting. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, that seems like a lot, a whole lot. I think that's, they're trying, how popular are they?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like basically, for whatever reason, they're also saying because this is a craft beer brewery, there's apparently been a decline in the national craft beer market. Call me crazy. I feel like it's crazier than ever, but maybe that's a stat I wasn't.
And what kind of, was it like an SBA loan they got like during the pandemic? Is that what they're saying? That they now
maybe
have to pay
that's
back?
What's,
because
yes.
It is, that is a really, if that's the case, it is crazy that like, first of all, I'm thinking I should have to fucking pay those loans back, or at least like only half of them. Or like, I think there needs to be a huge discussion on like forgiveness of loans for like businesses trying to stay open during a pandemic. But you know, it's a whole different story, but I don't know. It seems like a lot. Like the 2.3 is like,
wow. I know. And I just might not work, guys. Like plenty of places that we love have had to fucking hang it up like any reasonable person. And a lot of assistance was given out. And I do think with some of these restaurants and bars, they asked for way too much fucking money if they were able to access it. And as of last week on Thursday, the brewery had managed to raise $8,000.
I mean, it sucks. I mean, look, maybe they're just like, well, this is what we need, so let's just put it out there. I mean, I'm giving them props for at least just being like, you know, this is how it is, you know. But it's shitty. Godspeed to Akron Brewery, you know. Like, I mean, I'm saying, I hope they make a hell of a brew.
My God, that's so just wild to me. All right. Well, let's get into a server.
Submitted.
Story.
Story.
is more of like advice being asked, which I totally get. And this all kind of goes beautifully with the theme of today. So Kim in the DC area wrote in, writes in, she says, I work in a county that has recently implemented an upon request policy. Anything considered single use is to only be given to the customer upon request only, or the items have to be out so that the customer can take it only if they want to. So our spoons, straws, stirrers, napkins. This is new to me and this area. Have you covered the single use topic? If not, maybe a good discussion. I think we're going to have it right now, but a tricky situation for us as we're an ice cream shop. Unless people get cones, how else are they going to eat it? So my guess is you got to put those little spoons out for people to, you know, take of their own volition. But yeah, it is funny how this like big sweeping environmental policy, you know, obviously California, we've worked our shit out, you know, and I feel like you get,
have not, we
not with everything, but I'm just saying the fact that we were just talking about, you know, straw alternatives, whether it's bamboo or paper, or just realizing you got to carry around, like it's something that has been normalized for us. Like,
right. But I've got ice cream here and they just hand you a spoon with it. So like not every place is doing what this is happening in the DC area. So.
Right. And no one's coming down on you because like, what the fuck? If I went to a place and got soup and they're like, sorry, you have to bring your own spoon from home. I mean, that is just bad for business. Right. And I just think, you know, it's such a willy-nilly thing where I think these policies come along to see what they can get away with getting rid of, but there's no real penalty that's going to happen to an ice cream shop for giving people who eat ice cream a spoon.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine to just be like, spoons are over there. I mean, I'm assuming that's just what it is. They're just like, here's your ice cream, spoons are over there, napkins are over there. So I don't think, it's like when you go to Whole Foods and they have like the single like dispensers, you like push the like the lever and like a little spoon pops out, you know, I think it's kind of that idea. And it is, I think, coming back to the whole like, it's putting it on the consumer that it's our problem to change it, right? It's on us to decide like what we want to consume and what we don't want to consume. And what we do and don't want to use, instead of just like stopping making like all the single use plastic bullshit. I mean, right. That which could happen, you know?
Right. And of course, like this ice cream place that Kim works at, they're giving the people their option to get their spoons. But I think it's a comment more on like these sweeping policies that don't take into account that it's like, yeah, I'm going to need something to, you know, like we can get around not having a straw, right? Because you could take a lid off something and sip it. Or I got to be honest, the coffee places now with those, you know, for the iced beverages where you poke open the top and sip, you know, not my favorite, but you make do, you know, there are workarounds. But yeah, I think it is just kind of like people trying to make policies that don't reflect how people on the go actually live their lives.
No, absolutely. But, you know, I do. It is silly. I'm sure everybody gets over it. Like, would you like a spoon with your cup of ice cream? Sure. And I'm sure it's like a whole thing. But yeah, I agree with it. But I'm a cone girl also. So
me too. So I'm not.
I don't need a fucking spoon. I eat all of it. I eat the container.
Yeah, I'm a cone sucker. Yep. Big time cone sucker. Anyways, yeah, I think the long and short of it is no one's really coming around to be like the straw police in these situations.
The straw police.
I know, but it, at the very least, it has reduced, I think, a significant amount of waste. Really like when we get Seamless or whatever, you can click off that box that says like, no, I don't need a bag filled to the brim with straws, napkins, and paper shit. I love to just be like, please don't bring any more waste into this house. So however we can, you know, whatever. Cut down our paper waste. We're giving it a go. All right. So this is our second installment of Dr. Deb's service industry burnout advice.
Cue the music, Brian.
I hope Brian cued music. Anyways, all right. So we were talking about if this certainly applies to you, how you're feeling in the year 2023, especially, you know, with a lot of people reporting it was a really slow summer. Mm-hmm. It's really hard and thankless and the money may not have been there. And burnout can happen even when you're raking it in. But like, man, getting kicked around in a restaurant and still not making the money you're used to, that could certainly feed into some pretty bad feelings about the industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's kick it off with a nice piece of advice here. So this is number four on the list. We're keeping going down the list. So stop living for the future or for plans. Literally reel it in and live 5 minutes at a time or an hour at a time. Live for whatever decreases your stress. I am so on board with this advice. As someone who works on commission, I waited tables forever, obviously, but I'm a bartender. But now I still work in the service industry and I do facials and I do skincare and I rely on a clientele. I rely on people and customers to come in and that's how I get paid. And there are good times and there are bad times. And, you know, I'm at the point in my career where like I really try and sit with being slower. And I'm just like, you know what? Like, I'm going to take this. If I get to go home early and it means I make less money, holy shit, am I happy? Because I know, like, in weeks from now, a month from now, I'm going to blink. I'm going to be so busy again.
Right, right.
I just need to, like, this is perfect advice. Just, like, bask in the slowness. Just, like, take it in, like, seriously, 5 minutes at a time, an hour at a time, whatever, and just breathe and just see it as, like, this is just the universe saying, like, this is your downtime, baby. You know,
this is your downtime. And mm-hmm. It helps nobody when you are stressing about the future that's not here. You can't control it. You know, the more you catastrophize, you know, going into that shift or whatever, it's like, just be present now. And, you'll get through it.
Totally. I get it's hard when you're just like, I need money today. But I do. I also really think that like the money will come. Like, I really do feel that. Like, I think it always shows up, even though it's stressful. Like, usually, yeah. You know.
Or it won't. But anyways.
Or, yeah.
Okay. Number five on the list of service industry burnout advice. And I like this because this is, I think it's checking in with yourself. So number five, ask yourself, what would feel like just a little bit more relief at this moment, right? And we've tried to encourage that, like, please, you know, try and avoid things like heroin or mm-hmm. doing a shot sure, or whatever. Sure. And some of the suggestions are like, it could be something like, would a bowl of mashed potatoes like really make me feel comforted right now? Then fucking go make some mashed potatoes. Maybe just watching a funny movie after your shift is over. Maybe saying no to that extra shift, even though you're like, I really, really need or want the money, you know, but maybe saying no to the extra shift would give you that fucking reset you needed. Maybe it's going outside, just enjoying nature. Maybe it's crawling under the covers. But the point is, you take a minute to check in with yourself mm-hmm. and to say, what can I do for me that's just for me to give myself a break right now?
Seriously. I'm coming at you with like, I think I've worked the day after Thanksgiving simultaneously for upwards of 15 to, I don't know, 18 years in a row. I have worked, whether that's at a restaurant, mostly like working, doing skincare. And this year I'm taking the day off.
Unheard of.
And I was just like, I thought about it and I was like, but money, but this. And I was like, you know what? I just want to like be like, I want the day off like everybody else has the day off for once, you know? So I'm going to bask in it. Hopefully not be too hungover. They'll be mashed potato eating for sure.
God, mashed potatoes are like a hug for your insides.
Yeah.
Nom, yeah. Nom, 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 nom. You know, but go do that little thing. It's like a little gift you're giving yourself, because I know it, and it also like it sounds so simple, but when you're in that hyper focused on the future, you are anxious, you're catastrophizing things, you really are not present. So I know it sounds so small, but yeah, give yourself a little gift. Self-care, baby.
I gotta say, this is like has nothing to do with anything because you guys like can't see what's going on. But Brooke has like a very cute like record store background happening right now. And like the way, you know how it's your green screen when you're on Zoom, but there's still like little things that will like poke out you can see.
Yeah.
And I every like maybe 10 seconds, your little FDR like print.
I know.
Like that's pokes little... out right next to your head. So it's like there's an FDR goat. Teddy, oh, Teddy. It's Teddy. Moment. Sorry. Yeah. It's Teddy Roosevelt. It's Teddy. Sorry. It's Teddy. And Teddy just like pops out like it's making me laugh so hard. Anyway,
well, I think we're, you know, I think this is our little take care of yourself corner,
cozy corner. Yeah, mashed potato dreams,
mashed potatoes in bed under the covers, people. It's okay to be that way. Oh, you know what, and I'll end on this. Something that I didn't realize, we were hiding from our neighbor's Halloween party a few Fridays ago. And because they were DJing right in front of our house, I was just like, we got to close all the doors. And I was like, let's move our TV into the bedroom on top of the armoire. And you guys, I did not grow up with a TV in my bedroom. So when I tell you, we were just like under the covers with a movie on in bed, and we had like snacks, and we each had a little cocktail, and I was like, I feel like I'm at a hotel right now.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Like, I do love the TV in the bedroom. I'm never going to give it up ever. I know people say, like, you shouldn't have it. I would eventually like to have, like, a projector in my hovering over my bed, so it's like, you don't see the TV in my room. I can just, like, hit a thing, but...
Noise.
I'm going to tell you, creature comfort, baby.
It was great. Maybe it's something as little as dragging the TV into your bedroom and then being like, I'm staying here for a bit. So,
oh my God. Well, if you guys have any advice to give us, if you have any server submitted stories, more importantly, holiday themed, oh my God, we're in the midst of it. Any retail stories, you know, mm-hmm. You guys know we live for that. Please send them over to sidewardpod@gmail.com.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Andrea, you know that I have been just looking for an excuse to talk about my glory days, which are the pre-restaurant days.
Oh, yes.
I worked for years in several record stores in retail, basically got paid in music, never made any money. Don't know. I tried to pay my rent probably with CDs, then I went back and sold. But so joining us today is my first record store job friend and coworker, MJ, everybody. Welcome, MJ, to the podcast.
Awesome. Hey, good to be here. Thank you.
And you, being here. You are located in the Metro Detroit area right now.
I am.
Nice. So, you know, MJ's repping the hometown. But I was trying to look up. So the name of our record store was called Record Town. And right. It was a chain.
Classic. And,
yes. And, you know, I don't know if this was the same for you. I always had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. I wanted to work at the indie one in Rochester called Record Time.
Yeah.
That was not cool.
it was not corporate. And so I had a little chip on my shoulder that I worked at a corporate record store in the mall, but we were rad, right?
I mean, was it really a mall anymore by then?
I don't know what it was. It was a
inside? Was it like
inside.
Like a mall? Okay.
It was almost closed down by the time we were working there.
Got it. Wow.
There's 4 stores left.
Yeah, I think the way, because imagine you would like walk in and that first big like hallway in a mall, and then we were the 4 stores. It was us in a Foot Locker and probably an Auntie M's pretzel, something like that.
And a hot tub store, which I also worked at.
How old were you when you worked at the hot tub store?
I think I was like 19 or 20.
Wow. How many hot tubs did you sell?
0.0. But I did make them give me commission on all these like stuffed animal fish that I sold.
Oh my God.
Guys.
This is great.
It is so crazy. Andrea, so this, our mall was called Meadowbrook. What was your classic mall in your hometown?
Oakview Mall, which is now for sale, by the way. The entire mall is for sale in Omaha. I would say that was the big one. Westroads was another big one, but Oakview was the nearest to my home.
Nice. So I want to start out by asking you a few questions, MJ. What is the journey that led you to working in a music store? Was it something you set out to do, or did they not give you enough hours at the hot tub store?
Well, the hot tub store came later. No, I was just looking for a job, basically anything. And I thought, well, I like music, so I'll work there. But then it only took a few minutes at the Pontiac store, and I had keys to the Rochester store and the Pontiac store, and also 2 hot tub locations at the same time, because I can't stop.
That's a lot of keys for a 19-year-old to manage.
It really is. Management material written all over you. So there were, so because Record Town was a chain, there was Rochester, which is where I grew up, more suburban, Pontiac, the other area, certainly more urban. So was there a difference in music you sold, probably?
Oh, vast difference. Like the Pontiac store, it was like the new Tupac, the new Notorious B.I.G. And then you go over at Rochester and it's like, what, Steel, Celine Dion. So, yeah.
We were trying, because I remember OK Computer by Radiohead came out the year, and we played it all the time, and people would still come in and want Matchbox 20, and we're like, but listen to this.
You're like, everything. Oh, man, that's great. Did you guys, not to like jump so hard into it, but did you have like employee pick like racks that you guys put up at the store where you'd put like your choices?
Did we have those?
We weren't really supposed to, but I started sprinkling in like a little hidden corner where it's like, let's just do this until someone from corporate office comes in and shuts down our independent thoughts, man.
Yeah.
We would have to build top 40 end caps and sell the most popular music. And so as a little bit of a individual grab back, we started writing tiny reviews and having like a little corner.
That's pretty much opened anything we wanted to listen to anyway.
Yeah. And like for some of you, because we were saying our listeners, some of them are in their mid-20s. So this is just like what I've never been in a music store. So if you can sort of like off the top of our head, like a big one used to be Sam Goody. You could go to Best Buy and get CDs.
Tower Records, baby.
Oh, yeah. My God. Tower. I got kicked out of there a few times, didn't I, Brooke?
Why did that happen?
Because they chose to make it open until like, what, 1:30, 2 a.m. and put it right next to a bar. You know, how am I supposed to go visit my friend after I just closed the bar?
I know. Would I be working that fucking late?
You did. You did. Because yeah, I can remember. Yeah, I would come in and go, Brooke. Like, no.
I couldn't go to the bar yet. You were old enough to go to like probably the Peanut Barrel or the Land Shark, and I'd be stuck, you know, still slinging records at 2 a.m. Just like, this is fucking crazy. It's like working in a bar.
Yeah, right. But who's coming in at 2 a.m. other than drunk students people from next door? Like
this. So when I, so first we just skipped ahead like a year or so. So my employment at Record Town in Rochester landed me my gig at Tower Records in my university's city. So this was at Michigan State University. So this was a campus record store. So it was fucking nuts.
And this is your guys' like, and this is your friendship, like going.
We moved.
Like moving towns together.
Moving towns and now harassment because she, you know, older than me, and then would just like bang on the window and be like, hello.
I think it's great that you went from the high school version to the college version like pretty quickly. Like that's fantastic.
The first year, to be fair, was I think my first summer home from my first year of college. I didn't stay on campus. I tried to sell Cutco knives and that didn't go well. I didn't make any sales.
Being 19 is so weird. And
it's so hard, employed. You guys.
Like even just MJ, you like I'm looking back to, I think when I was 19, I had like 4 or 5 jobs. Like for some reason. Oh yeah. Yeah.
If I was like, awake, I was working.
Yeah, me too. What? Weren't we supposed to be backpacking through Europe? No, we had 4 or 5 jobs instead.
Hey, I could still party. I could still go on a boat party at, you know, when I got done.
Same. Yeah, me too. Then I'd get up and work like 2 or 3 jobs the next day and get drunk all over again. What? I'm okay.
Wearing the same clothes I wore 3 days ago because I haven't been home yet.
Those were the days, everybody. But yeah, so like we were at the point in time. So this is probably 1998, right?
It was 97. It was probably 96, honestly, because my daughter was born in 97.
No shit. That's crazy. Well, for me, it's feeling 97-ish. So that would make sense because that was after my first year of college. So I'm not either way. But what I'm saying is we were at that point in history where music stores, I mean, that's how you got music. There was no internet, like all you could
you
do
couldn't
was
just like order up a 99-cent song off Apple Music. Yeah, you just had to straight up go be like, whoa, the CD store, Tower Records open till 2 a.m.
Right.
It's pretty great, actually.
It is great. And we'll get into it on this document that I put together. But like vinyl was out. So like nobody collected vinyl. This was all CDs and cassettes.
Yeah.
And it just so many jewel cases everywhere. Crappy plastic, and then the security cases, especially in a corporate store, were like these long, if you can picture it was like a foot long of plastic that they would put around your CD.
Yeah, it's like and a CVS receipt made of plastic.
It's like a what is like the carjack, you know? It's
I don't even know how to describe it.
That thing like, that you put on your steering wheel, like, but they put it on a CD.
Oh, sure.
Your low jack, anyways.
Right. I mean, what I think of it is like the crazy hard plastic that comes around like toothbrush heads now, where you're trying to open up a packet, like a SIM card package, right? I'm trying to like describe it for people who don't know what's happening.
Yes.
It's something like that, but harder in plastic, and it like holds the CD in place, and you need a special key to open it up to release it from its prison of plastic so you can take it home and try and get the actual thin plastic off of it, which is another mind-boggling venture because you probably need a special tool for that, which I'm assuming you guys were flush with at the store.
What was your method for opening music, MJ?
So you turn the CD on its side and then you scrape it along the counter.
Uh-huh.
And then that will rip the plastic. And you can just pull the CD out of there.
So I learned because
this is such a dead technology tip. I love it.
So analog. The like in another store where, you know, you'd sneak music, but then it's like stuff that we weren't supposed to listen to because we were supposed to play out of our promos when I was at Tower Records. So the workaround, because we had a shrink wrap machine. Oh, baby, who didn't love a shrink wrap machine? You guys don't even know what fun it was to live in the 90s. But so I would open it And then the way you did it, because the seal, it then had a sticker that ran along the side of the CD. So what you do is you take the hinge off the back, open it that way so that you keep the seal intact, listen to what you want to, gingerly place it back in, put it back on its hinge, re-shrink wrap it, boom, you listen to the album you wanted to listen
to. Wow. Like steaming open letters. You know? So it reminds me of.
So MJ, let's talk about like a daily routine. I'm remembering meeting you like at the mall at opening, and we'd have like a big, one of those big chain gates that you have to lift open.
Yes. We would open it with a key, like a regular key, jimmy it around for a little bit, and then open it like a garage door.
Yep. So you'd push the gate open.
Yep.
Because as we know with malls, there are no doors, just gates. Anyone can walk in.
You got to make sure it's all the way down or all the way up, because if it's not all the way down, somebody's going to slide under that thing and come into the store
and kill you. Yes.
That or steal something. And then you have to go off running after them.
Yeah. Did you ever have to go after shoplifters?
I wasn't supposed to, but like I did. I mean, I chased people through Montgomery Ward and everything.
Wow. Was that the best escape route, do you think, to get hidden in? Was Montgomery Ward, like, where you could be like, and if they're in Montgomery Ward, they're gone. Like, no one's finding them.
It's a maze, yeah.
How often would you get shoplifters? Was there, like, was it weekly? Was it daily?
Well, in the Pontiac store, it was pretty constant. If you could see somebody standing there staring at you, you knew they had a razor blade and they were cutting that security thing off of their CD back there. But in the Meadowbrook store, it didn't seem to be as big of a problem.
You definitely had your weirdos and shady people, as you just learned to clock customers just in general over the years, where you're like, all right, they're just weird, but they usually buy something.
And yeah, you get to know them.
You get to know them, and we for sure had regulars. And I love, like, when it would be Missy and I, you know, and when it would be MJ and I, sorry, Missy, MJ, all good, updated name MJ, we would be two just like adorable teenage, barely 20-year-old girls hanging out. So we would get the Foot Locker creep, Lance, from across the hall, would like leave his job and would come sauntering in his fucking referee costume or uniform, because, you know, Foot Locker employees had to dress like referees. And then he'd come in and he'd lean on the, you know, counter, be like, ladies, 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 what's up?
No.
What's good? What kind of music you listening to? What's cool, ladies?
No, the best was when he stood in the hallway to smoke a cigarette and he would just stand on the other side of the door, like, just on the other side where the carpet and the tile met. You'd stand on that side, smoke cigarettes, and talk to me.
Like in the back hallway of like where the behind the scenes hallway of the
mall? No, you could smoke right in the mall.
Oh God. As an employee, you could just like openly smoke. Like, oh my God.
Well, you had to step outside of the store, but yeah.
Got it. No, I totally get that. But you're still in your uniform. Uh-huh. And you're obviously just like leaning out of the store you work in, just, or the store you work in, just like, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I love this. If you think back to it, all those like seating sort of in the round, the cement like sculptures.
No, yeah. There is all had ashtrays. For sure. For sure.
Which is so like mind blowing to me. So yeah, like a lot of days it was just us like receiving new inventory, basically having to merchandise, put it in its little plastic prison, you know, do a lot of restocking. And there was so much dusting and cleaning all that shitty plastic everywhere.
How about when you had to alphabetize the cassette wall?
Oh my God. That's amazing. Or then you would have to go looking for posters because people would come in. We had a big poster display. Uh-huh. So you could buy posters at the store, which was great. And then what's fun is we would get the big like cardboard cutouts, you know, of certain artists, you know. God, there was such weird music out at that time. Like David Bowie had just put out that like, I'm Afraid of Americans.
Yeah.
That song.
Yeah.
But then Prodigy was also
out, you know, smack my bitch up.
I had a lot of fun music coming out in the 90s, for sure.
And we had a dress code, didn't we? Because it was corporate.
Yeah, kind of, I guess.
I don't think we could wear, like, we couldn't dress cool, really. We had to, you know, and our actual manager, remember Mike? Poor Mike with diabetes?
Yeah, he passed away.
No!
Yeah.
Oh, man.
R.I.P. Mike.
Damn. Well, Mike, and Mike is a real character from, like, a ghost world type,
absolutely.
Movie. Incredible. Yeah. Great dude. What for sure was like in a band called Botfly.
Yeah.
Drummer, right?
Drummer. And it did suck because he was a typical 90s older guy who got diagnosed with basically type 1 diabetes and was not taking care of it, not treating himself well, chain smoking, drinking, you know, huge. We were all chugging so much soda.
Type 1 diabetes?
I think he developed
type
1.
Yeah, I think so. He could hardly walk at some points, yeah.
Wow.
Wow. But, like, he still really tried to keep it as rock and roll as he could. He had long hair. And then he would come in and wear a short sleeve button down with a tie, which is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Because he had to look like management material.
So did he boss you guys around or did you guys have the run of the show?
He was so laid back.
He didn't do. He was just there. That's it. He just signed in. I wrote the schedules and all that. He was a figurehead. That's it.
Like, did he have an office he would hang out at in the back? Was there probably a back room?
There was a desk back there, I guess.
But I do remember, you know, with corporate, I think there was a big push from, you know, MJ and I to try and make it more cool because that's just what I do. I always try and force my way. And for a minute, we were, you know, we felt like we were being really cool and indie. We wanted to prove to people if you came into this record town, we knew a lot more than the latest Cher, you know, single that came. Do you believe? You know. Who are other employees? I don't remember.
It's hard to remember because I worked at so many different locations.
Got it.
Well, at the same time.
My world revolved around you. So
I remember you had your tongue pierced and you took that out for our interview and then it closed up and then you told me about it. I was like, oh, dang, dude, I wouldn't have said anything.
Oh, I got my tongue pierced and then I had to be in a play that took place in the 1800s and I had to take it out.
Yeah, getting your tongue pierced was for me was like that. I'm not the kind of girl with the body where I would show my midriff and get a belly ring because I'm chubs. And so I'm going to do the tongue ring.
Pretty intense. Yeah,
pretty intense. But I wanted to be, you know, controversial. So basically, you know, to set the stage too with all this retail is like we would have, you know, record release days. So you might end up with the type of store you're at with a line out the door for everyone coming to get the new album from whatever artist. And especially when I moved over to Tower Records, we would do Mondays at midnight. We could be the first to release it. So here, once again, a 19-year-old working, you know, going to work at midnight, closing the store down, opening it up again. And then however long the line was and until we were done selling the records, I would get home at 3 a.m. sometimes.
Wow. I mean, that had to be exciting, though, because that was an exciting time in music and to be able to like experience to like get your hands like on a CD like before anybody else, like pretty cool. You know, and I assume you guys got like fun merch and extra stuff when those days would happen too.
Yes, definitely more so at Record Town because I didn't work with tyrants like I did at Tower Records. We were all terrorized by the manager there who she had a glass eye. Boy, was she scary. Sherry. Sherry was like 4 feet tall with a blonde bowl haircut, looked like a little boy and had a glass eye. And boy, was she scary.
You're sort of describing my sister-in-law minus the glass eye.
But yeah, so that it was crazy because, you know, you would be slammed with doing like the definition of retail. Boom, you know, and the faster you were and the better you were at ringing up, not making any mistakes, counting back cash, because people still really didn't have cards at their disposal. And yeah, if they did, you had to use the cruncher, the mash.
Yeah, the carbon copy. Yeah. And then how would you do that? Did you have to like call it in at a separate time? Like when you, or did you call it in right then? I forget. Or did you swipe it and then also had to carbon copy it?
No, that was at the end of the night. You
just
entered all that. Yeah, you called all that in. You put them in as like checks.
Got it.
But that, they were
okay. Kind of, yeah. Wow. This is kind of like
that really is a trust system. I gotta tell you.
Oh my God, it is. Yes, absolutely. No checks and balances. Just here's plastic with carbon. Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. But yeah, and two, I think what was really crazy is like, you know, I have so many memories of just the for me, I'm talking about Tower Records now, but the bright yellow plastic bags that you could just slide someone's CD in, throw it at them and be like, next, and just like furiously trying to get through a sale. And especially in a college town, based on what artist was coming out that night, the line would be like from central casting of just complete stereotypes of who you think would listen to music, like, you know. So it was hilarious. Other than back in the day, everybody fucking loved rap, so it would be the whole college town, you know. Yeah. Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, it would be everybody. But when it would be new Dave Matthews, it would all be the same fucking bro in a tattered baseball cap and a North Face fleece.
Oh yeah, it's like all the girls who had like the patchwork on the side of their jeans, you know, like going in line. I had some of that. So like you had these days, but obviously if it was Tower Records, and I don't know if it happened at Record Town too, but like if there was a big band coming to town, did you guys, were you Ticketmaster hubs as well?
No. Yep. Well, you were, weren't you? Yeah.
Yes, but we didn't sell any tickets at Record Town.
No. No. Okay. You had to go. All right. No.
You go to like Macy's, you'd probably go to Montgomery Ward for that or whatever department store.
Yeah, department store.
You could buy tickets for concerts, everyone, at department stores, or you would walk up to a window at a music store. We would have to send people to Harmony House. Or a Blockbuster Video sold tickets to the concert you wanted to go to.
I remember going to the department stores for tickets, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No line there. Nobody knew.
Uh-huh. Nobody knew that. But so that would be like, I would get hives also when tickets, you know, would go on sale for really, really big concerts. And I mean, people would be riding you so hard and you'd have to navigate what looked like, you know, the first version of Pac-Man. That's like how, like how terrible the computer screen
like little
were.
Dots were the seats. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, what section? And then I like get left mixed up with right. And then they're going like, come on, they're selling. I know it. I know it. And then you'd, you know, and then it would pump out some tickets and they could reject them, I think, if they didn't like the seats that it gave them. I forget how that worked. But dude, the pressure to get someone a good seat for the money they wanted. It's like basically we were the internet. Like I was SeatGeek. You know?
Yeah,
I'm
for sure.
So glad I didn't have to do that.
Oh,
God. I mean, would you have like someone specifically like, because I would assume there'd be busier days than other days when people would come in to buy concert tickets because of the day it was announced. But like, was everybody just expected to be trained on it? Or were there like people who were better at it than other people who would just man the...
There were, you know, I was not the go-to, but I would have to do it. And I absolutely was trained. Usually some of our older, more seasoned employees who had been at Tower for a long time and were there, they'd come in specifically for concert sales, you know, and just be like, I'm not on a regular shift. I'm literally just over in the corner selling tickets to this concert that just went on sale. So yeah, thank God that was not like my usual thing, because I'm telling you the stress. And then MJ, what about like people will come in with special orders.
Oh, I forgot about special orders.
And it's, you like, know, there was no internet, so you'd have to like look in a book.
You had to look in a book and then you had to write it down and then you had to send that in. And then you had to wait for it to come back. And then that person was going to come, what, every Tuesday, I think, was when we got like shipments. Yes. So they were going to be there every Tuesday. Did my thing come? Yeah.
You couldn't just call them?
Yeah, we did. We called them, but they would just show up.
just twiddling those fingers. Just like if you had a bell, they'd be dinging it, right? Like a lot of like, you're like, oh Jesus, it's the guy again who wants the all he wants the whole Al Stewart catalog. Like nothing and against then, Al Stewart. I'm just painting a picture, you know?
Well, and I think too, because I'm picturing like, you know, there'd be the designated drawer behind the cash register that would have handwritten notes and a rubber band with the person's name and their phone number around it. And I promise you, there were people who just liked to make special orders to just make the special orders, and they never came and bought anything. And then you'd have to try and merchandise or send back these really, really weird pieces of music.
Yeah. That's so alphabetize funny. Them back into the catalog somehow. Yeah.
How long was a normal shift for you both? Like, were you there for a solid 8?
Oh, I was in management, so I was there for 12-hour shifts.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And if you can imagine, our diets subsisted of I would go get an extra large Coke and a Cinnabon.
Oh, I just assumed, and I thought about it before, you guys just probably ingested so much sugar working at a mall. That's just how it goes.
You make friends with the people at the cookie place.
You sure you do.
And then they give you a cookie and refills all day. So...
That's great. And you're like, we just, this like sampler of CD just came out and just slide that across the counter and just be like, we got a bunch of extras, wink, you know, looking out for each other.
Oh man. You guys want a Smash Mouth sticker?
I'll give you my employee discount.
That's awesome.
No sexier words have ever been uttered, right?
Dude, mall employee economics is fantastic. You know what I mean? But at the same time, there's got to be rivalries. It is interesting you guys worked at such a small place. You probably got to know each other pretty quickly considering there weren't many employees around or many shops open.
It would be it would be me and MJ, and then like Mike was sleeping in the back.
Oh, do you remember Tim? Because Tim worked.
Yes.
Yeah. Tim.
Yes.
He was the fastest smoker I ever met. He could smoke a whole cigarette in like a minute 30. Like it was fascinating. Yeah, I worked with him at both stores too.
Okay. He also had a band?
Oh, I don't think he had a band. No.
Okay.
No.
And I was going to ask, like, so like, were there, did we have a version of like, so in the restaurant industry, obviously everyone jokes and it's very overdone at this point, but like Karen's, we didn't really have a record store version of a Karen, did we?
No. Well, they first started with the parental advisories around the time I started at the Pontiac store. So we would get moms a lot. You know, you sold my kid this. It has a parental advisory sticker on it. We'd get people like that for sure.
Fair enough. The dawning of a new era of
Yeah.
I mean, that did, because my parents would never know because they didn't really like 90s music. And so I was just so screwed when they started doing the explicit lyrics, parental advisory, because they like, I had to beg them to let me get a Red Hot Chili Peppers tape.
Oh, yeah.
And you didn't. Sex, sugar, blood magic, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And you didn't need an ID to buy that. So I could sell that to an 11-year-old if I wanted to.
Yeah.
That wasn't my problem. But the moms.
Exactly.
The moms came and told me about it, though.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. So I think, you know, the way to talk about, you know, for those who grew up only knowing digital, only knowing really, you know, if you have grown up with iTunes your whole life, it's really funny to think back to CDs was our era for sure. And I found this fun fact that Dire Straits' Brothers in Arms in the year 1985 was the first album released by an artist on CD that surpassed vinyl sales and therefore set the standard for other artists to be like, we want to put our music on a CD. Huh. And then it became the norm for like 10 or 15 years.
Wow.
Crazy, that's right? And then we are all Gen X. We are the only generation to have experienced a completely analog childhood and a completely digital adulthood.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Isn't that weird to think about? Okay, then Gen Z, listen up, Gen Z. They are out there right now. And you know what their big thing? They are buying Walkmans and cassettes.
Stop.
Yeah. Urban Outfitters is marketing cassette tapes, and the old school Walkman are back.
That makes sense.
Isn't that amazing? Cassette tape sales are up by 443% since 2015.
No.
I love when you said, like, the old school Walkman is back, because I was like, that's right. The Walkman were on tour recently. Like, that's where my brain went.
Amazing. We're so old and crusty. But I love, okay, so basically, you know, when interviewing like some 23-year-olds, I was reading an article from like the Guardian or the Telegraph UK. So these kids who are known as post-analog generations, I think what is actually awesome, because at first I wanted to roll my eyes at this, but like they instinctively crave the experience we all had as music-loving teens. They want to hunt for the treasure. They kind of want to have the tactile sensation, feel like they accomplished getting the thing they wanted more than just hitting a button on their phone. And this is the cutest thing ever. A 23-year-old music lover who bought cassettes said, listening to a tape feels rustic.
Don't you mean rustic root? I mean...
Wow.
That's great.
But you have to rewind that thing all the way back. Do they know they're going to need pencils to rewind those cassettes with?
Yeah. Do they know that their car is going to be full of music trash?
Are they going to have to go on Amazon and find, or no, actually, I was thinking, I got an old Case Logic CD case, one of the big boys. So guys, just so you know, there's nothing really special. You just keep your cassettes in a shoebox and let them spill around all over the floor of your car.
That's so great.
So I have an important question for everyone. Do you still have your CDs?
Yeah.
Wait, I did have a box, several boxes. I think they're gone finally though.
I have my big, you know, I have my ones. It was like the single sleeve, not like the double thick one. That one got stolen out of my car when I was, you know, however old. We all had that happen, right? We all had our huge book that probably got dinked at some point, whether it's like you had a party and someone stole it, it got taken out of your car. Who knows? What a mess. R.I.P. But I do, like, in a storage area, still have CDs, and I just can't bring myself to, like, awesome. A lot of them were probably scratched to shit, let's be honest.
Half of them weren't even in their cases.
You know? That's so true. And now I have like a wall. I have a small wall of vinyl now. So, you know, building in other ways. And vinyl, I love record collecting. So, ask Brian, my husband. He like, I think we on average have 2 to 3 records delivered to the house every week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Andrew and Brian have a pretty killer vinyl collection. And, you know, I think it's just the thing with every generation, you want to do the thing that you didn't get to grow up doing, which was going to get vinyl like our parents' generation did. And so that's why I'm laughing at the love, like the newfound fascination of cassettes, which I'm like, I'm going to hang on to my CDs because I guarantee those will 100% be back in. I this is like the cutest thing ever. I don't know why I was so delighted by this, but I was like, I want to listen to my fucking CDs and I don't have anything. They make these adorable CD players now that just stand upright and you pop the disc in and you can actually like hang them on your wall and then connect the aux cords to like your good speakers or what. It has its own speaker, just sounds shitty, but I did a setup so it comes out of my album speakers, but I'm like, I've got this whole collection of my CDs, which are my youth, and they mean a lot to me. And
I love that.
My boyfriend was like, why don't you just listen to it on Apple Music? You know,
not the point, Sean. give me a 5 discs on shuffle, baby. Like, you know,
that was a big one.
Remember, like when you would have like the 5 disc changer, but you in your car, but you had to like put it in your trunk.
I was just thinking about that. Yeah, it was all in the trunk.
So we pull over to the side of the road. I just want to change up the mood a little bit.
Oh, well, oh my God. You guys, I mean, way back then, you know, like late 90s, early 2000s, you know, cars just really only came, you know, just sort of like tricked out with a cassette player still.
Right.
And so my parents sprung for me to get a CD player installed. And that was how you got your car broken into.
Oh, yeah.
In Lansing,
sure.
All the time. People would jack you. They would smash your window open or jack your car door and rip that CD player out of your car. Unless you did the thing where you could pop. You could pop the face off.
Oh,
of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Security. You know, bringing it back to like restaurants, when I would work in restaurants, like that's when you could start burning CDs, right? That was, and I know this is like moving up with technology, but you would like, you have to burn your CD onto your computer, right? And then from there you could like make your own CD playlist, which was tape playlists were much easier, you know? But I definitely remember like bringing in those CDs to work and then like having this master 5-disc like burn CD on repeat that was like, everybody wins.
Yeah.
Curation.
Making people mixes.
Fuck yeah. Yes. So when Andrea and I worked at this bar and restaurant together in Chicago, we would have like a DJ come in and they would play CDs. Mm-hmm. Like they would DJ with CDs. And then we would just, you know, the bartender, which was Andrea, they got to basically either, what was you guys would, yeah, there was a disc player. It was just a pile
of 5-disc changer.
Yep.
And so we were in charge. Yeah.
Which is really hilarious to me because now everything is obviously curated and is, you know, played over online at a restaurant or whatever. But yeah. How long did you stay in record stores, MJ?
I think like 7 years or something. Well, like off and on. I knew I could always get a job for Transworld Entertainment. Mm-hmm. So wherever I went, like when I was in Chicago at one point, I just worked at one of those places, and about 7 years, I'd stay off and on.
And it's crazy because I know for a fact that, you know, minimum wage was $5 an hour, and I spent every last penny I made on CDs.
Oh, I sat at McDonald's and negotiated with the district manager over $1.50 on my. Yeah, absolutely. I was like, I'm managing all these stores. Can I please have $6 an hour? You know?
Wow.
It is crazy to think about. And it makes me just so sad because I'm like, dude, they should do, you know, obviously like the independent stores are where you go get vinyl. And now obviously you can get cassettes because they know. But it's just like, there's some, I don't know. I like, could I ever work in a record store again? Do you think you could?
No. I mean, I could if it was an actual record store, right? Like one of the independent ones.
Well, that's kind of all. I feel like that's what we got now, you know? I don't see any other. I mean, I don't, Best Buy, I think, has a little vinyl, you know? I mean, what else would there be out there other than independent record stores?
Yeah.
Right now, yeah.
It's just vinyl and apparently cassettes for the Gen Zers.
Yeah, you do have to go to Urban Outfitters to buy this though. that's so interesting. And so MJ, like getting out of record or music shops, like was that it for retail with you? Were you like donezo with retail after that?
It seems like I got right out of that.
Happy to be like, see you later.
Honestly, that was really fun and nostalgic for me. I mean, working in offices and stuff like that was just so boring. You know, we didn't have the Lance or the, you know, people like that. It was just sitting at a desk, kind of boring. So
we always say that, like, you know, how formative to like wait tables, how formative it is in life. Like, would you agree that like being public facing at that young of an age and, you know, having responsibilities like shaped you in a great way?
I would say so. Yeah, I would say it taught me a lot of responsibility. I mean, for sure, we had to be responsible for you know, merchandise and stuff, opening and closing stores, definitely. And I learned a lot by
learning to just like, navigate talking to people. Like customer service is just a crazy thing. We're like, hello. Like, I do love that it's clear cut. It's like, would you like to buy this? Let me make that happen for you.
Transactional exchange, baby. Like, yeah.
That's why I didn't succeed at hot tub sales. You either want it or you don't, right?
That's a fact. I love that you're trying to like, you're like, yeah, you think you just would like really trying to talk somebody into a hot tub is a lot.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy. Boy, oh boy. You're like, winter's coming. It gets real cold here. You'll be the talk of the town.
Robin, we finance.
Fire this baby up.
Yeah, we finance too. So
we can finance. We can get finance that tub right into your home, you know?
Do you remember how much, like, the most expensive hot tub was in the store?
Oh, my God. Well, these were freestanding hot tubs, so they weren't, like, in ground. You know what I mean? They were.
Right.
They had, like, a soft side. So, I don't know, a few hundred dollars. But I can remember trying to run credit on people and being all excited because I'm going to get, you know, commission now. And they wouldn't get approved.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Worst day of both of your lives. Everybody loses in that scenario.
Hot tub dreams.
You're like, come with me. I know where to get a free cookie.
Dippin' Dots just opened up across the way.
Oh, my God. Oh, so good.
Lord Almighty. But right now, you are working and living your life as a full-time artist. You are tie-dyeing the shit out of really rad old vintage t-shirts. Just let's talk for a minute about that.
Congratulations.
Thanks. I'm a tie-dyeist. Yep. Just kind of started out with over the pandemic, just got really into tie-dye as something to do, and then now I'm like aiming for the tie-dye cup in Oregon. So yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
your designs are impressive. I love that it's so much more than the willy-nilly where I'd be like, I don't know, I just put on a few rubber bands and it looks like I got shot with a paint gun. Like, yours is fucking sick.
I hours and hours of tying, and chemistry also. But
that's
awesome. Mind Piles tie-dye.
Yeah, on Etsy.
I'm already like, why have I not? Like, why didn't I know this? Do you do, and then you, what kind of vintage pieces do you find? Like, whatever is cool, and or do you work in a specific medium with vintage pieces?
Yeah, I do like a lot of the new stuff too, but it's fun to go thrifting and see what you can find for graphics and stuff too that people like.
Yeah.
And just so you know, like the Gen Zers, like they want that Tasmanian Devil t-shirt. They want that 90s shit. So just hot
they
tip.
Absolutely. Them. Ghostbusters. Yes.
Yeah. So. Space Jam.
I love
Jam.
It. Well, and just like repurposing like old clothing is fantastic. Just like giving it new life is wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. There's super sweet. Go ahead.
Oh, one of the things people love too is custom stuff. So, like, if you can make them a specific color and style, you know, that's my favorite.
That's super cool. Are you working, like, is it all independent? Do you have your own studio? Or do you work, like, with other tie-dye artists or collaborate? Or
right now it's independent. I'm working on collaborating with some glass artists because I really want to get into the circuit with the glass blowing community.
Cool. Yes.
Yeah,
you can watch. Then you can be able to see you on Blown Away one of these days.
Sorry, I marathoned that. I was like, I didn't know I loved this so much. Yeah. Binge watched 2 seasons of Blown Away.
Dude, I would hardcore get down on a tie-dye competition show.
Yeah, and they go right with the glass-blowing community, so it's so fun. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, because it's like you just kind of like never know what's going to happen until you're like in it, right? I mean, I would imagine.
You should see some of these guys and the science and geometry they do. I can't do the math that some of them do, but I'm working on it.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. I'm going to check it out right now.
Yeah.
What an interesting, what a great retail season plug, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I will plug the shop for sure. Mind Piles on Etsy, and we'll put some stuff up in our stories.
Yeah, it's actually on Art Piles on Etsy. I'm working on a .com for Mind Piles, but
okay, Art Piles
Etsy
on
right
Etsy.
Yeah,
okay, cool,
nice. Are you on Instagram as well with Mind Piles?
I am on Instagram under Dharma Pile.
Okay.
Lots of piles. Yes.
So many piles.
I have a lot of piles going, yeah.
That's good. And we should all have a lot of piles. Look, you had a lot of jobs when you were 19, so now we're in our 40s and you have a lot of piles, and that's just where life takes you.
It is, yeah.
Well, if you make it out to the West Coast, you better hit up your girl.
Where are you at now?
L.A.
L.A. stuff. Okay. Yeah, yeah, my brother just moved out of Huntington Beach, so.
Crazy. I remember him.
Yeah. Yeah. That was another guy. Sam Goody. My brother.
A rival. Uh-huh. Oh, that's so great.
Awesome.
Yep. Awesome.
Well,
it was so good to meet you. Finally, I've heard great things.
You I'm too. Going to
book it. Yes, absolutely.
And I think this will, let's talk about records and memories anytime. All right.
That sounds great. All right, you guys.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, MJ. And this is part one of our little retail revisit that we're doing. We love talking about our sister, type of employment. And guys, you know what we say at the end of every episode?
Oh yeah, we say Godspeed.
And good tips.
And good tips.
And good tips.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Talk to you later.
Thank you.